As requested by Mike from Marengo, here is Chicago's 25 or 624 as we introduce our good friend, resident raconteur and weekly contributor here on the program, Bob Ibeck. Bob, top of the morning to you. Your name has been the subject of many conversations amongst our listeners, and Chicago Mike from Marengo. I got a chance to meet this Saturday over at the UWL football game here, Bob, and a really great guy. He wanted to make sure we had this tune lined up for you. How you doing this morning, my friend?
I am doing well. I'm doing much better than the ice hockey team down here.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you, we should have a new name contest while they're going through all these rough times. Why not? I mean, they haven't won a ball game, and they lost again.
Yeah, they did. Toronto got them.
All the debacle that's going on down here, as everybody's probably read about by now. So maybe it's time, you know, with some of the teams like the Washington Redskins having to change their name, and the Cleveland Indians, which are ensnarled in a whether they're not going to be able to keep the Guardians.
Isn't that something?
They didn't check that out well enough, or I guess they didn't make their deal to steal their name, but maybe they're not going to be called the Guardians. So maybe it's time to be, you know, the Blackhawks could be just change their name to maybe just the Hawks.
You know, Bob, it could be just the Chicago disgraces. This is really such a black mark on the sport. It's a black mark on the city and really the organization. Not the city itself, I shouldn't say that, but on the organization. Here's what I will say, because I mentioned it to our audience this morning, Bob. During the 2010 season, you know, I was working in the ECHL. I was working in the NHL in the offseason for the NHL award shows and a number of things. I was really invested in this Blackhawks Stanley Cup run because one of my mates, center ice down there in the Orleans Arena, John Sloviak, who passed away last year from COVID, was a firefighter in Chicago and a huge Blackhawks fan, all right? He was a huge Blackhawks fan, loved Jonathan Toews, and had really been a long-suffering Blackhawks fan. I was as excited for the Blackhawks to win that Stanley Cup championship as probably any Blackhawks fan was. You know, now we look back, Joel Quenneville, coaching for the 7-0 Florida Panthers, will probably be asked to leave the sport. He won't speak to reporters. He'll have to talk to Gary Bettman. You've already got Stan Bowman, a guy that, according to a lot of folks that work with Chicago, a great guy. He's out of a job. And you've got this situation, Bob, here with the investigation, which has now been made public, which, again, does some real damage to the NHL. And this is the year the NHL finally gets back to a real national stage on ESPN and Turner Broadcasting. I don't know another situation that could be worse for a sport or a team than what we've got going on right now.
Well, you know, I look at it a couple ways. I'm disgusted by what I heard, and I knew some of the people that were involved in that. The CEO, John McDonough, worked with me as the marketing director when I was with the Chicago Cubs. My first intern that I hired, Jay Blunk, was a vice president with the Blackhawks, and Jay was tied to the hip with John McDonough. He kind of followed him around wherever franchise he went to, and I feel very bad for Jay because I know Jay very well, and he's a straight up kind of a guy. But sometimes you get kind of roped into being in with a group that decides to make a decision as disgusting as what the Blackhawks did then. There's no excuse for what happened. There's none. I mean, I know everybody, you know, didn't want to break up the karma as they were going for the Stanley Cup, and when all this came down, I think they were in the conference finals against San Jose, and they were getting ready to go into the Stanley Cup finals, and they didn't want to break momentum or karma or whatever you want to call it. I think in that case, they got too involved in winning is everything and not doing the right thing. Now, let me tie that into the same thing that we're seeing now with the World Series. It's tough to watch the Houston Astros because they did affect my son's team back a few years ago and all the cheating that they have come out and admitted to. So which is worse? And I'll take a stand on this. What's worse, in my opinion, is what went on in Houston, because none of the ball players who basically ran this whole scheme, okay, even though it was given to them, they ran it. There's four or five of those characters that are still out there parading around in this year's World Series. And Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, never suspended anybody, never fined anybody. They basically gave up their statements, and for doing that, they were absolved of any wrongdoing. Okay, I think they damaged the integrity of baseball as much as the old Black Sox did way back in the 19-teens. In the case of the Blackhawks, it was the front office, and I don't want to see the fans. You know, they're not going to take it out on guys like Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews. You know, those guys probably had no clue what was going on, and I doubt very seriously they did until later on when the investigation got going on.
Well, but I heard
it's
the opposite.
Front office people.
Well, so listen, and Bob, I think this is an interesting way to sort of look at these two topics because you've got real stains in both sports, the
yes.
Houston Astros and now the Chicago Blackhawks. I take this approach because when the Houston Astros came out and we found out what they were doing, it was their managers, okay? It was Alex Cora who would, you know, did get fired.
Right.
It was their managers that told their players to do this. It was the management of the team that put up a video guy in the outfield to help steal signs. The players didn't come up with this all on their own, all right? They got
dictated
by their managers. Now, for the Chicago Blackhawks, this is a failure of multiple levels of management. I put the blame, both of these blames, on the managers. The players are going to do what they have to do, right? One of the reasons this got swept under the rug for so long with the Chicago Blackhawks, especially with Kyle Beach, who is now announced that he is John
right.
Doe in this playing professionally right now in Germany, is because players know that this ruins their career, or at least it was thought that that would ruin their career. You don't want to have to out somebody, a powerful video editor, in a Chicago Blackhawks organization because of the ramifications. So you've got that victim mentality. The Astros, they,
right.
all, they were all on board with this together, but the managers made that happen. Now, for Chicago, look, you can't blame the players. I did hear it recently, even yesterday, that Jonathan Toews was aware that somebody had complained, but he wasn't aware of the full extent of what the complaint was.
Okay.
This is where the Blackhawks really internalized it.
Let me stop you a second.
Yeah.
Let me stop you. I would say I agree with what you're saying up to this point. Unless Joel Quenneville comes forth and says, I knew what was going on. You can't. He's the man. He's the coach, manager, whatever you want to call him,
right.
of the Blackhawks. If he didn't know this, if it was hidden from him by the rest of the crew, okay.
It wasn't.
Okay. If he admits that he knew what was going on and just kept it from his team, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I would agree with you because then it goes right back to Cora and the same analogy there.
So what had happened, and we were looking at this yesterday, Bob. I was watching TSN, as a matter of fact, and in this TSN broadcast, the Toronto Sports Network, for those that are unfamiliar, they described Joe Quenneville being in not one, not two, but three meetings with members of his team's organization where this complaint was actually lobbed to Joe Quenneville, who basically said, don't talk about this until we're done in the Stanley Cup. Now, Brad Aldrich, who is the guy that did this to Beach and to another player, as a matter of fact, who is still anonymous at this time, then got asked, do you want to go through an investigation, an HR investigation, or do you want to just resign? He resigned. He goes to high school and sexually assaults a high school kid.
That's the sad thing about this is there. Not only did the things happen, in Chicago, but it carried on and it hit a high school kid. It carried on. I know he went over to Notre Dame. They claim nothing else happened over there, but there were two or three other instances that happened, and certainly he attacked an intern with the Blackhawks right after the Stanley Cup parade.
Yeah. That's right. It's really one of these situations, Bob, where, you know, if you're the NHL, you're reeling. You've just got yourself back on ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
You just got yourselves back on the Turner networks. And then there's this situation. You know, I think that at the end of the day, however, sports fans, they can separate an entire league, even a team and their players, from the misgivings of their management. And I'm looking at
right.
the NHL with the Seattle Kraken. You know, the excitement that's there, the Vegas Golden Knights from a few years ago. I mean, the league is in a really good spot, and the Tampa Bay Lightning continuing to play good hockey this year, too, as the defending Stanley Cup champions two-time over. I mean, I think the league's going to be okay, but this is one of those gut punches for a sport that is always trying to just get on the national radar in a real way, right, Bob? I mean, we know that football, baseball, basketball, those are America's favorite sports.
Yes.
You know, hockey's had a couple of inroads, and they've gotten close. But there seems to always be something that just hockey can't get over. It's either a strike, a lockout, this that holds them back. I hope this won't be a detriment for the rest of the season. But you're right, the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, maybe they just changed their name to the Chicago See No Evil, Speak No Evils. I don't know.
Well, they've got a lot of COVID things going on, too.
But yeah, they do.
10 players, the coach, and other people. I've been doing a lot of hockey work in the last week out in Seattle with the inaugural season for the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah.
And which kind of cracks me up because I'm looking at the number of people that are going out to watch this team in their first year.
Yeah.
And we're doing a project for Nyko Sports out there, and it's kind of interesting. They are still buzzing. But then again, I've always said hockey fans are a little different than, say, baseball or football fans. It's a select group. When I covered hockey back in the 1970s, both in Washington, D.C., with a wretched Washington Capitals team, they only won eight games that year.
Yeah.
Eight games.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Senators were better. But I think I got the two worst teams to cover for a period of 3 years, the Senators and the Capitals.
Jeez,
but then later on, I covered the Flyers in Philadelphia. But I would see the crowds, and in Philadelphia especially, there'd be like 19,000 that would show up every night at the Spectrum, sold out.
Yep.
But, you know, as I walked in through the stands occasionally, I would see the same 19,000 people
there.
It's a targeted audience where in football and baseball, you get people on the perimeter that come in and join in, like when the Tampa Bay Bucks, let's just say, go on to the Super Bowl last year. There's a lot of people on the outside of the inner circle that come aboard as quote fans, and that happens in baseball as well, but especially happens in baseball and football, and to some extent maybe even basketball. But in hockey, it's the hardcore. You've got about 20,000-25,000 people that live and die with that hockey team, but the rest of the public in that area kind of say, oh, okay, it's nice, but they're winning, but, you know, I'm not going to jump on board.
You know, Bob Ibeck speaking the absolute truth here. If you're just joining right now, Bob, former PR director for the Cubs, longtime sports author, sports journalist. Bob, you know, working in hockey as long as I did, you know, spending 5 years in Vegas with the Wranglers, that's the exact takeaway that I had. You know, you go to a Wranglers game, or you would have gone to one, and you'd see the same 5,000 to 7,000 people every single night, every single night. Now, it was that passionate fan base that gave Gary Bettman the idea to expand to Las Vegas. And when they'd been having the NHL award shows in Vegas year after year after year, that interest and that intensity in hockey continued to swell. And the league made a great call, because you're right. Seattle, Vegas, these are markets that you might have thought are a little awkward for hockey, but yet the fans, the hockey fans especially, are rabid, and they will consume that thing on a nightly basis. Now, the TV numbers, that's what the NHL needs to sort of pick up. I mean, in the NHL Stanley Cup during the bubble year, Bob, they were drawing the same amount of viewers on average as an XFL football game. So that's not going to get it done, but now they're on ESPN. They're on Turner Network Sports. I think this will do a lot of good things for them. If I can, turn our attentions, Bob, to the Green Bay Packers-Arizona Cardinals game tonight. I'd love to get your thoughts here, because Arizona-Green Bay is a game that has the nation's interest. The Cardinals 7-0, the Packers 6-1. But the Cardinals have now lost J.J. Watt, not a surprise to folks that follow his career. He hasn't been healthy for 6 years. For the rest of the season, presumably, the Packers will be without Devontae Adams, Alan Lazard, and Joe Barry, all on the COVID-19 list. But, Bob, for some reason, and I feel like you and I are in a similar camp here, for some reason, I've got this inclination, I've got this gut feeling, the Packers win tonight, even though they're 6.5-point dogs, and they do so fairly easily. Bob, are you sort of in that same camp there?
Well, I'm putting my reputation on the line in my confidence pool, which I'm not doing that well. I'm at the point right now. We have about 25 guys that we do it every year, and normally I've been ranking anywhere from 1 to 4 most years. My son and I are both in the same pool. He's now 18th, and I'm 13th. So, take this with a grain of salt. But you know what? Tonight I have in the confidence, and you know how the confidence pool.
Yeah, so sure do.
I've got 7 on the Packers, and I'm saying they're going to win by 7, 31-24. I'm going with it. I just think that you know, they're 6-1. They've won 6 in a row after that opening nightmare. I think they know that this is their real test. And I think they're going to go out and win tonight. I really do.
You know, Bob, I've got the same feeling, and there's really literally no inclination statistically, analytically, trends-wise, that would give us that sort of approach, right? I mean, we're looking at this from a feeling perspective. You know, Packers have played games under Matt LaFleur 1,200 miles or more away from Green Bay seven times. They have gone 2-5. On a short week, teams from one side of the country traveling to the next win at about a clip of 33%. I just feel like Aaron Rodgers, without Devontae and without Alan Lazard, Bob, is going to paint one of his masterpieces. I really do. And when you put a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who is a Michelangelo, a Leonardo-esque football player, in a position where, let's say, he can't use his favorite paint brush. That one's just not available.
Right.
He's
got
to use all of his other tools. He's got plenty of them, but he's got to use them all in order to complete the canvas. He does, because that's what singular talents do when they're given little to no choice, and that's what I think is going to happen tonight for the Green Bay Packers. Now, I know if they lose, I won't be surprised. I really won't, but I do think they win, and I think they win by a couple of scores. So I like your 7 points, Bob. I've got the Packers crazily winning by 14 points. I know that sounds insane, but that's what I've got.
I don't know if I jumped that far, but I'll tell you what I do. I think it's important for them to get off to an early start.
Massively.
Don't play from behind, because, like, with missing those receivers and everything else, if you're down by 10, 14 points and you don't have your key receivers there, they're going to be putting a pass rush on Aaron Rodgers that will lead to a lot of sacks. But I do believe if they can get off to an early lead, even if it's only like a 7 or 10 point lead, they can win this ball game. I just have a gut feeling I'm going with the Packers.
I like it, Bob, and I think your confidence pool is going to show that you're the confidence man in general.
Well, maybe I can jump up from see, I have to start making some crazy, you know, predictions in the next 10 weeks to get back in the race, because
this
everybody goes, if you just go with the favorites, you're not going to gain any points in anybody,
no.
as my son pointed out. So we're going to be doing some crazy picks in the next few weeks. Either we'll finish in the at number 24 and 25, father and son, or we're going to get up there in the top 4 or 5 again.
You know, I see you in the top 4 or 5, Bob, because, you know, that's just how good you are. And your son, Kevin, of course, is a real winner, too. As a matter of fact, we've still got a number of listeners that think that you should be the next commissioner of Major League Baseball, and your son Kevin should get any general manager job in the league that he so desires. But, you know, we'll leave that hanging out there, Bob. We've got a lot left to come in Major League Baseball. Game 3 of the World Series is tomorrow.
What about Charlie Morton? I mean, how sad, huh?
I loved Charlie
when he was with the Rays.
Terrible.
And to see him go down with that that right fibula bone that was broken, he's going to be out probably well into next year, I think, with that.
It looks like it, and it was really such an amazing thing. I didn't think he got hurt that badly when he took that shot, but to throw 19 pitches, Bob, on a broken leg and actually strike out, I think, 3 batters.
Yeah, wasn't that something?
Fantastic.
He's a competitor.
He really is, but unfortunately, the stupid Houston Astros, cheaters as they are, probably going to win the World Series. I've seen this movie before. When Houston got down and got battered out by the Chicago White Sox, they just blew the doors off them. The Chicago or Boston Red Sox thought they would get them with a couple of big games and some grand slams, and look at what Houston does. I feel like Atlanta's got themselves some.
Well, I will say one thing. When they're back in Atlanta, you know, tomorrow night, and Altuve comes up to the plate, I think you bury the first pitch into his rib and get him off the plate, because he just sits back there and waits for that first pitch fastball.
Yeah, he does.
Now it's a little different in Minute Maid Park than SunTrust Park. Okay, so they have that little area way down the left field line with that short porch. That all he does is just wait for an inside pitch and try to rip it right down the line.
Yeah.
And that's where he gets his home runs. So I think you got to really pitch him tough. Send the message to them, and I hope the Atlanta fans, with their tomahawk chants and everything else, maybe they can come up with something that rhymes with cheat. And with guys like Bregman and some of the other ones, when they're up at the plate, really rip on them, because I think all of America is rooting against Houston, except the people in Houston.
Right. So basically, you've got the third largest, economy in the country and one of the biggest markets rooting for these guys. And the rest of us are sitting here thinking about those Braves. And listen, I'm pulling for Atlanta, too. Haven't won since 1995. My father was a big Braves fan. Once he moved out of L.A., he became a big Braves fan. And since he's passed away this year, I want them to win for him. We'll see how it works out tomorrow. Game 3 in Atlanta. Bob, we're up against it. But as always, appreciate you, man. This has been so good, and I thank you for your thoughts on the Blackhawks and really the Packers, too. This is just it's a wild day in sports. We've got so much different stuff going on, and some of it's not real fun to talk about. But I appreciate you being willing to wade into that with us.
Well, listen, I always enjoy being on the show, and my best to all your audience and everybody. And go Pack. That's one of my favorite teams. I've been a diehard Redskin fan, I have to admit it, for all the years I covered the Redskins back in the 70s
sure.
in Washington, D.C. So my heart's still a little bit there, although I'm not a big fan of Dan Snyder and what has gone on there. There's another situation that crazy things have happened, like with the Blackhawks. But, no, the Packers, if you go down to my man cave, I've got some really nice memorabilia down there from Brett Favre, and I actually worked with Brett on a couple occasions to do some nice projects. Great guy.
Well, go Pack go. And Bob, I know that makes all of our listeners just tingle with excitement hearing you talk about Brett Favre. I can just see Jason Breacher right now putting his head in his hands and looking up at the sky wistfully. Bob Ibeck, Brett Favre. Oh, how could this be? Bob, you're too good to us. Thank you for everything. We'll catch up with you next Thursday here on the program. Until then, be well. My best to you and yours, okay?
Okay, David, you have a good day and a better week.
All right, thanks so much. We'll be right back here on the WKTY Morning Show, speaking with Tom Sawyer, the Winona State Warriors head coach. First up, Scott Robert Shaw with us in the WIZM newsroom. Hang around.
Now, the area.